We made this.
Hello, thank you for choosing We Buy Records podcast today. I appreciate you've got a lot on. My name is Tim Scullion and I buy records, and I'm joined, hopefully as always, by my co-host Paul Field. Paul, do you buy records?
I've been buying records now for about 30 years, from dusty old second-hand shops all the way through to Discogs and beyond, and spend many an hour in your fine shop. So yes, we both do buy a lot of records, and the idea of this podcast was to there isn't really a record buying. There wasn't one, was there? You know, because we're going to cover things like cleaning your records, you know, buying tips, preparing them for selling, places to look for
them. Lead off with the most exciting elements of the podcast, Paul.
What, cleaning
we're
records?
We're going to be talking about cleaning records.
Do you know
putting
what?
Them in an envelope.
I know
there's a lot to learn.
Always learning, right? And we're not here to tell you know what's right and what's wrong. We're always learning ourselves. This week on Twitter, someone said to me, you know, the cardboard stiffness you use to post records, the way that the lines run, put them at opposite angles and then it increases the tensile strength in the packaging.
That's good. That's a good tip.
See?
Tune in for that.
If that's for you, this is the podcast for you. The tensile strength on the positioning of cardboard.
And if nothing we've said so far makes sense to you, this isn't the podcast
Correct.
For you.
Yes.
But welcome.
Yes, welcome to We Buy Records. Quick thank you. Our friend Tony Black, he's adopted us. He's taking us under his wing into the We Made This podcast network. They do pop culture podcasts, things like
We're
June.
One of them.
I know. Well, I said, Tony listened to the pilot and he was like, yep, you qualify as pop culture. And I was like, really? What, me and Tim?
Does that mean that we're popular already?
I don't think, no, it's just... Oh. You know, but anyway, they culture. Have, they, you know, they cover podcasts on things like The X-Files, June... really fancy album review show. So yeah, no, we're really, really pleased, and especially as neither of us know what we're doing and these guys are experts.
News at the top of the show. We like to keep everyone up to date with the latest stuff.
So in this week's news, it was sad news actually. HMV going into administration again, and including its, you know, its flagship store on Oxford Street. Now, obviously, a lot of these sites, this is all about the rents. From a We Buy Records perspective, back in the day, I used to go to that flagship store in Oxford Street. I used to buy 12-inch singles all the time. They had a fantastic selection of imports. You know, they had really good records that you wanted to buy. They did, I think last year, they had like their own version of Record Store Day. And they actually had some really good items.
Yeah.
Although our local one managed to tweet a picture of the first customer through the door who was a local record shop owner who'd bought one of everything to flip. And in fact, some of the items we'd actually gone in to buy for ourselves, we couldn't get because him and his mate had bought them all.
I should just stress at this point, Paul is not talking about me.
It wasn't Tim,
it
no.
It wasn't me.
It was another record shop owner. But when you do go in there, their vinyl selection is pretty, you know, stuff for Father's Day. Dad wants a Genesis album. You're going to go to HMV. You're going to buy, you know, repress. What you're not going to get in there is, you know, what you're getting independent. A lot of interesting stuff. A lot. I've gone in there just in passing. I thought, oh, I'll nip in because that's out this week. I'll go and grab it in HMV. And of course, they haven't even got it. I mean, you know, and we're talking fairly mainstream-ish stuff on Mute Records, for example. A couple of times I've gone in to buy stuff. Nothing. Nada.
The selection, the record section in HMV is not terrible.
No.
And actually, you know, you kind of have to give them some credit for it. I don't know, having anything other than just sort of the top five. You know, the fact that they have a record section that you can flip through is kind of worthy of praise, isn't it?
I guess so, but then, I mean, then you've got the Grease soundtrack for $28.99.
Bargain.
I know, but... So how much is the Grease soundtrack? If you if you stopped
hundreds
it...
Hundreds of pounds. if it's in good nick, a fiver.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not £29. There's no,
not £29.
I just, you know, so it is gifts of records for people who don't buy records almost. That's what it feels like if you're really into vinyl. And then obviously the CDs, we'll touch upon this quickly because, as you know, the CD market must
you
be...
You promised me we weren't going to mention CDs on the podcast.
I see how much a new CD costs. And in Bexhill, there's a lot of charity shops. One of them near me now has a sign up saying no more CDs. They won't even take them. And the charity shop near my work does CDs 4 for 99p. And not CD singles, they're normally 10p, but actual, including albums, box sets.
Wow.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. The you know, it's fallen quicker than the DVD market. And even those are down to sort of 50p and under. It won't be long and CDs will be 10 pence.
Though I've had conversations in the record shop where that my partner and I run, where people are saying that CDs could make a kind of comeback because it's a digital format. It means you can own an album that you love on digital media, which they can't take away from you.
Yes, because a lot of the streaming services, and if you buy stuff that's in the cloud, they lose the rights to it. And it just goes, doesn't it? I've heard about this, especially in films. I've heard them taking stuff away. I'm not a fan of that. I mean, I do pick up CDs now and again, especially if it's stuff I've got on vinyl. I don't want to ruin it. You know, a lot of 90s albums on vinyl now, the originals are worth a lot of money. So if you've got a 200 quid album, that's not... That once that gets to that level, I kind of take it out of circulation, if you like. I'll play it on special occasions, but it's not an everyday record anymore.
You mean like your copy of the first two Oasis albums that you treasure?
I don't have either. No, of those.
So listeners will learn throughout the podcast that there are certain genres of music and areas of music that Paul has a kind of almost kind of pathological lack of interest in, and it's absolutely brilliant. And Oasis. And most Britpop indie is one of them. Although there are some indie bands that you like. But in general, the genre is dead to you.
It passed me by. I mean, I've got a couple of Pulp records and a couple of Sway 12-inch singles.
That'll do.
There you go. See,
You're in.
I'm in. But yeah, no.
So are you saying... what about the argument? Flog the Oasis LP and keep the CD. Make yourself 200 quid. You've got the music on CD. That'll do.
I think... Sometimes it's just nice to have it in your collection and own it. You don't necessarily have to play it. We do have a rule at home. Anything that comes in the house has to be opened and played.
Nice rule.
Because otherwise you get, you know, people who, you know, buy all these box sets and leave them in the... Yeah. You know, I mean, to be fair, I have got a couple of Depeche Mode box sets in the wrapper in the wardrobe. It's only because I've got every single thing on them already on vinyl. It's just a complete, you know, more laziness thing. I was going to open them at Christmas as a treat and then I completely forgot.
What a tragic Christmas.
Yeah, I know.
So we've strayed already.
I know, I knew we would. But anyway, so I'm glad that HMV's been saved. And I'm glad it's not Mike Ashley. It's a Canadian company who've come in and saved it. And it sounds like a lot of the rents have been renegotiated on some of the ones that were threatened with closure because they're now pulling some of those back into the fold.
Because there were ones which were announced as closing.
Yeah, for sure.
And then a week later... not closing. And yep. So you think, so that's why.
Oh, it's night follows day. They've renegotiated the rent. The landlord's gone, okay.
But then good news for everybody in theory, right?
Yeah, we need HMV on the high street. I'm just, you know, wishful thinking. I want to go back to the days when I could, you know, buy all of my stuff there.
Well, apparently the Canadian company that you mentioned has been quoted as saying that they want to have an emphasis on vinyl.
Bring it on.
So your dream could come true.
It could come true. So what news have you got this week, Tim?
My news is that according to the Entertainment Retailers Association, music has become a majority rental market for the first time, in line with streaming video and games. So now more people in this country are paying for services to stream music and have no ownership of it.
Okay.
Rather than buying a download, buying a record, buying a CD. Never happened before. Subscription, according to the figures released by the ERA, subscription now accounts for 62% of total recorded music revenues. And so music subscription revenues were up 38% in 2018 to over 800 million quid.
Where do you stand on subscriptions, and specifically artists? And I see this every year when Spotify release their figures. A load of people kicking off that they've had however many million plays and they got a check for £4. Now, and I always say the same thing each time. It is a tool I use to discover new music, which I then go and buy the records for. And every time they say this, I think, oh, well, you're in the minority, nobody else does that. I'm thinking, well, they must do. I can't be the only person who's using Spotify as a discovery tool to then go and buy records.
Well, I do that as well, but I still think that we're in the minority.
And minority,
and that's
yes.
This podcast is for that minority.
How many tens of millions of subscribers do they have? You don't need a big minority to start shifting some records.
This might slightly help answer your question. So music subscription revenues were up almost 40%, which is a massive increase from last year. And as I said, 62% of all music revenue is from streaming, is from subscriptions. What they call ownership formats, so CD, vinyl, LP, ka-single, downloads, now account for 37% of revenues, which is about 500 million quid. So the total recorded music market is £1.3 billion a year, which is quite a lot of money.
Is this all? This is new, though, isn't it? Is this? Does this take into account the used market, of which is?
Ooh, no, I'm going to say no.
No, I don't think it does.
But if as you're saying, in terms of discovering bands and then supporting them, actually, it's only the new market that matters in that way, because bands don't. I mean, okay, you might become a fan. Well, okay, all right, hang on. Stop putting that face. Bands do benefit from secondhand sales, but they benefit from them in a more abstract, harder to quantify way. Because ultimately, if you've created a fan who's going to then go and see you live, buy your T-shirt, buy your sweatband, buy your football scarf, as Depeche Mode wanted about £70 for when we saw them live. Yeah, if the route into that was a secondhand record, then that's great. But it is not the same as buying new from the label, because that also encourages the label to keep going. You know, it's really complicated. But vinyl itself, vinyl sales spending for new grew by 4.4%. in 18, which isn't huge, but it follows 10 consecutive years of growth for vinyl, in which the market has grown from just over 220,000 units in 2008 to more than 4.3 million in 2018. So, you know, people often sort of say, oh, vinyl's back, isn't it? Records are back. And then I kind of go, yeah.
They are. And even better for people like myself who run around boot fairs, and people like yourself who have a shop where people bring in records to sell. These are all going to start filtering down soon. How long before, what do you think the next sort of no parlay is going to be? From is it going to be like Amy Winehouse or Adele? Do you think that you were going to go walk into Oxfam and start seeing those reissues in there soon for a couple of quid?
Yes.
It's going to happen, isn't it?
It's going to happen. It's going to happen when little Johnny gets bored of playing with his Crosley. So, excitingly, we now have an occasional feature on the show, which is a city spying report.
Yes.
So, Paul, you've been up north of the country.
I was in Liverpool. So for this city report, I'm just going to put this out there. It was a flying visit, so I did literally the town centre. And can I just say a big thank you to Beanie for being a guide and meeting us in Liverpool and being a fantastic friend and showing us around. So first up, and this was the place that was recommended by most people, which is Dig on Bold Street, which has recently moved, and it's now above a skateboard type clothes shop upstairs. So if you're, you know, a 49-year-old guy like me, you have to wander through all the kids buying their skate shoes to get to the record shop.
Oh, granddad.
But once you're up there, yeah, it's a really nice setup. The stock's really well presented. Most genres are covered. They have, you know, obviously the Beatles and Bowie and, you know, the regular rock and pop stuff, but there was a good selection of that. They had a dance section. They had a really nice selection of sort of indie stuff. There's a lot of Rare Nick Cave records, things like this. So I was really happy to see a complete spectrum of stuff.
I've been there. I thought it was great. They a big sort of avant-garde and experimental jazz section as well, which is fantastic and slightly unusual to see as well.
Yep. I managed to pick up a copy of B-movie, Nowhere Girl, on 12-inch for a fiver, which is actually a real bargain. So there are bargains to be had. And I, if you're thinking of visiting anytime soon, if you're looking in the dance section, I rinsed it. So don't expect to find too much left in there.
But Paul left all of the first pressing Beatles White albums that they were knocking out for a quid. He thought, I'm not fussed about that.
Not for me. And so from there, I headed to 3Beat, which, of course, didn't open on time. This is one of the problems. When you visit a city and you've got multiple record shops near each other and they all open at different times, it is really bloody irritating. So, because you want to just go to all four in one swoop. Then, you know, you've got one opens at 10, one opens at 11, one opens at 12. You know,
the dance that encourages you to spend a lovely day in Liverpool.
Yeah, maybe. The dance idiot opens at 2 because he can't get out of bed. But, 3Beat...
He was raving the night before, yeah, so exactly. It's fair enough.
So 3Beat was a label back in the day. I think it may well still be a dance label. And they have a shop there, which it looks like a pub, but it's a record shop. And for me, this was... Obviously, although this is a lot of stuff is what I collect, this was still the best shop in the city. They had fantastic racks, all by genre, you know. But then they had, you know, like things like Scouse House classics, trance classics, rave classics, you had jungle, drum and bass, techno, house. Then out the back, they had 80s synth, Guilty Pleasures. There are things like Bros 12 inches in there. It was a really good way of marketing that stuff. There was a lot of stuff in there.
Well, we can discuss the concept of Guilty Pleasures in the coming episodes.
I know there's no such thing as a Guilty Pleasure. A Guilty Pleasure would be like cheating on your wife or something. It's not buying something you enjoy.
Unless it's Bros.
Unless it's Bros. I think it must be off the back of that documentary they're trying to sell these Bros. Overall, pricing, really good. I got a Strings of Life bootleg. I paid £2. I'm going to say it's 10 to 15 quid easy, and fantastic. Everything in there was really good condition. I bought a huge stack of records in there, gave me a really nice discount, really friendly owner. So yeah, that my top pick for Liverpool is definitely 3Beat. Moving on, 81 Renshaw. Now this is one of three record shops that is also a pub.
Do you smell hipsters?
Well, I will say, of the three, two we went to, 81 Renshaw was the best because it was in the daytime. We did get a beer actually in there, but they had some upstairs.
It loosens the wallet very effectively.
It does. Well, we'll come on to that. Upstairs, they had a lot of record store day bargains and stuff from previous years, a lot of stuff in the sale. Downstairs was the main kind of event. You know, it was mixed. There wasn't a lot of dance stuff. There was a lot of Beatles. Again, you know, the usual rock and pop. The prices were pretty good. They had a Prince of Black Album promo, VG Plus. It was 100 quid, I think. Just over 100. So, you know, nothing too outrageous. We move on to the... I can't remember what the place is called, to be fair. It's There are two. They have two sites. Jacoby, is that what it's called? What's it called? I can't remember. But they are pubs, full-on pubs with a record shop inside them. And I thought, genius, this is a really good idea. There were people in there drinking, you had your records. And I went and had a look at the used section. And I found a VG copy, at best, of Erasure's The Circus. Now, again, Tim, I'm going to use you for reference throughout this series. How much for a VG copy of Erasure's The Circus? How much would that...
£2.
Okay, it was £10.
Wow.
So, immediately, for me, that's a red flag. And as I flicked through, yeah, everything was overpriced. The new records were the same records you find anywhere else.
Do you think this is because... did it feel like an add-on? You know, every record shop or every shop that sells records kind of has an angle. And it could just be that their angle is, we have booze and we have, you know, if people fancy it, they could buy some records, but they're not bread and butter. They're a fun add-on, which is why they might have obvious reissues and top whack price. Am I being too kind?
I think it wasn't a... neither felt like an add-on. It was a music venue, a record shop and a bar, and it felt like that was what it was supposed to be, just because of the sheer volume of stock they had in there. And they have two venues, apparently. We only went to one of them. I'm assuming the other one's a similar setup. It only opens in the evening. And on paper, and then my first reaction was, this is a brilliant idea. But if you're listening to this podcast and you know you kind of aware of what the value of records are, or you have a device in your pocket which will tell you the value of every record ever made.
Pesky smartphone.
I know. And I don't mind in the right environment. It's like being in a fancy bar paying a little bit more for a drink. If you're in a nice environment, paying a little bit more for a record. But I'm not paying five times the price.
No, it's, no,
it's just, you know. Yeah, so Liverpool, there is one more...
the most famous one.
The most... famous shop in Liverpool. Now, Pete Burns worked there and was renowned for being particularly awkward with customers. Stories of him refusing to sell records, you know, snatching them off people. You don't want to listen to that, love. You know, you don't want that. And I think that somehow that they've taken that and sort of run with it as almost like a marketing tool. I'm told by another shop owner, I think the guy's name is Miserable Paul. It's Miserable something. Another episode. Oh yeah, you mean Miserable, I think it was Paul. And I went into the shop and it was bloody miserable. The bloke didn't look up. He just didn't care.
That for me, that's rule number one in it. If you've got your own business,
yep,
you know, whether it be like record shop, bookshop, cafe, whatever, someone comes in, you acknowledge that they've come into
Correct.
Your shop.
And I was told that this was the hub of the Liverpool music scene, this shop. What it was a shop with a grumpy old man in it selling standard, overpriced, repressed tat. And I was really disappointed. I, of course...
Because it is an absolute institution.
Yeah, absolutely. And I left a terrible review online to just, you know, share my experience. And then just before this podcast, I thought... what other people have said? So, not so much as a hello when you walk through the door. The staff are not welcoming and the records are overpriced. The owner's staff are so miserable it makes you wonder if your customer is even appreciated. The staff are unfriendly. The staff are always miserable. The staff are so unfriendly I bought what I wanted but won't be returning. The sales assistant was miserable and not particularly friendly. Get a smile on your face and we might be back. It's 2019, fella. People are going to see this, they're going to read this. I know it might be a long-running joke in the city that you're miserable and Pete Burns used to be rude to the customers, but for visitors coming in for the day, I'm not so sure.
I mean, you know, there's the slight cliche of, like, not everyone was built for customer service or not everyone is suited to running a shop.
Mm.
So, you know, if it's what he really wants to do and his passion is for the music, but he can't do public interaction, that's okay. I'm really torn because I think customer service is really important and I also just think being nice to people is really important. But it really doesn't come easily for some people, and they're not necessarily doing it deliberately.
Well, here's the question, Tim. How much did I spend in there?
Did you spend zero?
I spent zero. And how often do I go into a record shop and spend zero?
Very, very seldom.
Very seldom. You have to be an utter, you know, before that happens.
It's time now for the part of the podcast which I think everyone's probably tuned in for.
Oh, absolutely, Tim. Yes. Cleaning. Now, you've come back from the boot fair. You've got a dozen... Well, in my case, it'd be a load of old tatty dance records.
In your case, about 50 dance 12-inches.
Yes, and you've come back with three Genesis albums. They're looking
so
a bit...
So unfair.
They're looking a bit... Looking a bit
muddy.
A bit grim. Obviously, you have a shop, and you take, you know, great pride and care in cleaning. I've seen you do it. I've brought records in. If I've got something fancy, I've even brought it in and paid for you to clean it for me. I'm not stupid. I get a professional to do it. But I am curious because I have two methods at home, and I know you have two methods in the shop. So you've got a 12-inch, it's a fiver. What's the sort of modus operandi? How are you?
Yeah, 5 quid 12-inch is just a few drops of our own mixture of isopropanol and distilled water with a dab of washing up liquid to break the surface tension of the record, wiped with a microfiber cloth, and then switch to either a different cloth or a bone dry portion of the same cloth. And having wetted it, you then spend as long, if not longer, then drying it. Mm. That, Paul, is the secret.
Right.
So what do you do?
Well, now, I know the listeners are not going to be happy about this, okay? But you just have to bear with me. I'm not suggesting you do this. All I'm saying is this is something I have done hundreds of times. Okay, hundreds of times with no ill effects. So, cheap 12 inches, when you've bought a lot of them and they're looking grotty, I get a bowl of warm water, two little tiny drops of fairy liquid in it.
Mm.
I then get a...
Sandpaper.
An old T-shirt.
Yes.
Cloth. And then I submerge the record really quickly into the warm, salty water, label and all. I do the old T-shirt or cloth or whatever it is, round and round and round and round, spin it round and round both sides, hot tap on, rinse, then this is the key, dry it really, really quickly with another old T-shirt or that. And I know people go on about tissue paper and records. If you buy those really fancy fat rolls, they're almost like using a brand new cloth each time. Then you just put them in the rack to... I say dry, they're pretty much dry and ready to go. I can do...
Yeah, how many can you do?
A lot. I can get through 20 or 30 records in under half an hour, easy. Now the listeners are just all switched off now, they've become mad. But hundreds of times, no problems. But your fancy machine, what's the mechanics of this?
So we've used an Okinoki record cleaning machine. I think we now have... the one by Project, and the key to it is sucking off. It's basically a vacuum cleaner in a box with a spinning disc on the top on which you put a record. You clean it with the same cleaning liquid I have already mentioned, but then you clamp on a little arm that turns and clamps onto the record. You spin the record and the arm had pretty powerful suction, sucks all of the liquid and hopefully all the crap that was on the record with the liquid. So the whole point of it is, when you're cleaning a record and rubbing it and wiping it, whatever you're doing, to some extent you're just moving crap around on the surface of the record. So the logic of the vacuum based machines is that when you're doing the cleaning part before the vacuum comes in, you're not getting rid of anything, you're lifting it out of the grooves ready to be sucked away by the vacuum, and it's the vacuum that is key to it. And it was, once I had a few experiences, I realized how much you're not getting stuff off just by wiping, or you are, but the difference is huge, which is why I think your method of blasting it with water to rinse it is doing something similar to the vacuum. So I can see why it works.
Yes,
although
it's
I really
the wash, then
it.
the rinse, but it's all about the wrist. So you've got to do it quickly. Oh,
if you could,
if we could
honestly,
see Tim's face.
If listeners could see the kind of jerking action that Paul is doing. Oh, yeah.
Well, if I get something fancy, and when I mean if I get something that's, you know, over 100 quid, I'll bring it into you. But for intermediate stuff, I have the Disco Anti-Stat, which you can buy on Amazon. I think about 40 quid, something like that, which is a plastic spindle and clamp, which you tighten around the record. It then puts a seal over the label. And then,
not that you seem to give a toss about the label.
That almost feeds into the paranoia about the label getting wet by them showing you that you need to clamp it when my evidence suggests that it doesn't make any difference. And then
I have, by the way, many a time spilled liquid or accidentally wiped it over the label.
What happened?
I have never had a problem ever. Okay. So I think you might be onto something.
Grudgingly. Mm. And then, so this, you've got this spindle through the record, you've got a clamp over the cover, and it sits in a little bath. It has some brushes inside. You get some fancy liquids with it. I typically don't bother, just put some warm water and one drop of fairy liquid.
Bit of spit.
Yeah, and then you spin it one way, and then you spin it the other way, take it out and dry it, or you can put it in. You open the bottom out and a little rack pops out. Did you know this?
No, that's clever.
Yeah, you pull it, and then inside the unit is a rack, and you can just stack your records to dry.
It's very good.
It is. I mean, it's what you can afford and what's practical.
This is true. If I was just a punter, there's no way I would have bought a record cleaner machine. Whatever they are, 300 quid, I just wouldn't. But what I will say I love it. I love my machine. I think it's brilliant. Those records that look 2% away from trashed can come up to sound almost perfect after going on the machine, and that is not true with any other cleaner method that I found.
Oh, no,
almost perfect, and they can look like absolute shit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think what I'm really interested in as well is the listeners' tips. You can find us at We Buy Records Pod on Twitter. Tweet into me with all of your abuse about getting records wet.
Please do that.
But I'm really, really interested to see. I'm sure somebody out there has got an even better idea.
Or just a weirder,
more stupid idea. That would be fantastic.
So please do let us know. If anyone's had success with the wood glue method, I'll leave that there, but that would be interesting to hear.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to turn our hand to a little quiz here. I have got reviews of albums. So, Tim, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to read you sort of the sentence from The Enemy, and then what the person on Amazon has to say. The Enemy said, this was an album of secrets, clues and riddles, and a fitting last transmission from the now ascended master.
Okay.
Anonymous on Amazon, I listened to this before he died and thought it was awful, and I haven't changed my mind now that he's dead. Would you like to have a guess what that album is?
Well, that's got to be Chaz Hodges of Chaz and Dave. That is a review of Black Star by David Bowie.
It is a review of Black Star
by
David Bowie.
What a charming bloke that reviewer is.
Did you like the voice?
Yeah, it was a good voice. It added to it.
Okay, so this one is, The Enemy said, a fascinating reflection of their frontman, outsized, often contrarian, egomaniacal but introverted, populist but unapologetically pretentious, insecure but hungry for attention. Cheesemaster, on the other hand, who over on Amazon, it's all crap, this is no different to me, it sounds like One Direction, utter shit. Would you like to have a guess at what that might be?
Well, I should say first that I think that Enemy review is very irritating.
Mm-hmm. So I think they don't, these always are all get from the same year, actually.
No idea.
It's the 1975's I Like It When You Sleep.
Hot band.
The Enemy said, this artist's fourth full length was yet again about how tough it is being him, but done via the medium of total ruddy bangers.
Oh, God.
Rosie, on the other hand, she only gave it a one.
She's not a fan.
No. It was basically him talking, not even rapping, about his depressing life. It sounds like someone recorded him coming round from anaesthesia. Can't believe I've wasted my money on this piece of droning crap. Same year again. So I think it is 2016, wasn't it?
Fourth album.
Mm-hmm.
See, I would say Kanye West, but he must have released more than four albums by that point.
Give in. It's Drake.
Oh,
Views.
Of course it is.
Right, last one. The Enemy said, this album saw this artist experimenting like never before, weaving in glitchy electronics, extreme vocoder vocals and Stevie Nicks samples into an all-American patchwork of sweet sounds. It was Americana still, but not as we previously knew it. A gorgeous, gorgeous thing. Anonymous over on Amazon, however, this sounds like he got a vocal effects toy for Christmas and has spent Boxing Day playing with it.
That's quite a good review though, actually, isn't it?
I don't like the vocoder. I really, really don't like it. I think it was a big album that year. Any ideas? I'm glad, because you got the one I would have maybe got, and I never would have got any of these.
No, I'm going to know it, but I can't.
It's
I can't.
Bon Iver's 22 a Million.
Of course. And that is an accurate description of
there
it.
There you go. That was this week's quiz.
I've actually come prepared with an Amazon review of my own.
Oh.
So just for fun, I'm going to read this to you. You can see what you think. This is a one-star review on Amazon.
Right.
Of probably your favourite album, The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Oh, yes, I know.
Let me just
well.
Ask, have you ever heard the album?
No.
No, okay. So this is one of the fun things about going and looking at one-star reviews on Amazon and stuff is that you get to see basically people trying hard to show how amazing they are, that they don't like one of your sacred cows.
Mm.
And that can be funny in itself. So with that in mind, let me read you this person's review of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Say you were to go into a record store and you ask the clerk one question. Hey, clerk, can you hand me a couple of CDs that were overhyped? So it's a good start already, right? He's got you. He's like, he's drawn you in, isn't he? He'd go and get all the Beatles albums and throw them in your hands. Take them all. We don't want them. Only those stupid, gullible people who actually believe the Beatles can sing are the ones that want them.
I like this
guy. It's good. I thought you might. This was written before Michael Jackson died.
Okay.
This review, so just to, otherwise this gets a bit weird. This is good. It's a good thing that their entire catalogue belongs to the genius himself, Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson made true music. This band reminds me of how overhyped Jessica Simpson and Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson is. Now that the catalogue and rights to the songs are in Michael's hands, Paul McCartney can't put out any new Beatles musical compilations but without Michael's permission. Michael would say no. I love that he knows that Michael's... Michael would say no, and Paul wouldn't even ask.
Mm.
Because they're in a bitter fight, because Michael paid over $50 million for the rights to the songs, as well as rights to John Lennon and Paul McCartney's catalogues. But this is this is his sign-off. Of course, Michael was ripped off due to the fact that all Beatles songs are not worth one scrap of poop from a dog's arse. One star.
And that review there was from an 8-year-old boy.
But it's quite sweet, isn't it, how people kind of reveal themselves through their one-star reviews.
That is such a... Because he really loves Michael Jackson.
And he's a fan.
That is a weird, weird thing. I don't like them.
But don't you want to meet these people?
Oh, I don't want to meet these people.
Time now for Shop of the Week. That their honour goes to Human Head in Brooklyn, New York. Now, Human Head exists in the hinterlands between Williamsburg and Bushwick. It's down a little side street. It's not massively easy to find. It's not in a particularly popular location. There's a vegan donut shop just nearby, which is very good. Paul's pulling a face. Anyway, Human Head, it's extremely good, a really good range of cheap records. I found that American records seem particularly prone to being in quite poor condition. I think that the sleeves as much as the records, because the way the sleeves are manufactured, it was printed paper pasted over thick cardboard, whereas British records, that whole cardboard was printed on and folded, so the edges are very prone to getting split and frayed. The sleeves are very prone to getting ring wear on them, so you probably shouldn't go to America expecting mint sleeves at all, and records as well. So with that in mind, it's a treasure trove of jazz, funk, Latin, hip hop, some rock and pop, but the emphasis is really on you know, music with a groove. And it's amazing that the staff seems really, really nice. They don't seem to be top dollar oriented, which is just, you know, you can, I'm sure you know, Paul, you just get a vibe with some shops that you kind of think, here, we've got a record, what is the absolute most we can get for this record? They are literally the opposite, and they've got whole bins full of $2 jazz, $2 funk, $2 reggae LPs. It's amazing. It's also something quite alarming happened in there. We were in there chatting to the guy working there, and his dog was up on the counter next to the record deck on his basket, which is, that's where that's set up. It's set up next to the record player. Can you guess what happened?
I'm going to guess that the dog pissed all over the record player.
So the dog leant on the record player, moved the needle, scratched the record. And everyone in the shop, all of our kind of stomachs tightened, and we all just went, and he said, don't worry about it. He does that about 3 times a week. And I asked him, and how much is that record worth that he's done it to? He said, about $60. He didn't care.
Move the basket.
Well, so that's what I thought. But it turns out the dog is quite needy, and the dog needs to be near him.
Move the
record deck. Maybe that's another.
Absolutely.
I felt like there were solutions. I felt like it was something we could have conquered, but he wasn't. He didn't care. It was brilliant.
Well, this week, Tim, I did stumble upon what must be, based on Google reviews, the worst record shop in the world. There were, I think, 210 reviews of this shop, and over 200 of them are one star. Right?
Oh, God.
I'm going to name it because this... What are you doing?
Because it's fascinating.
Well, yeah, it's called Franz and Joseph Plattenladen, and it's in Berlin. Go and look it up. Go onto Google Maps, look up this place. And you can see it's almost become a badge of honour to be thrown out, because pretty much every review here, you get kicked out of the shop. This is where I actually found it, on Discogs. And the guy says, I walked in early one evening, said hello, proceeded to flick through a few records. After 30 seconds, what are you looking for? Because you're making me nervous. So he says, I laughed it off, still hoping it was just his humour. And the guy then says, what are you looking for? Because I don't have what you're after. So I thought I'd be cheeky and said, I'm after some hardcore German techno. And he says, I don't have any. There's no point in looking. I could tell straight away by your face that I don't have anything here for you. And the guy's like, are you serious? And he says, yes, I have to close now. Go. There are plenty of good record stores in Berlin for you, but this is not the one. So he then escorted me to the front door. I thanked him for his help and hospitality. He locked the door on me and shouted, on your way. I turned round and told him to F off, you. Looking through the rest of the reviews.
And the shop's called, was it Joseph Fritzl?
Franz and Joseph Plattenladen in Berlin. Joseph Fritzl, yeah. Very glad to find out I'm not the only one this guy was extremely rude to. He told me never to come back. All I did was ask some questions. His first reply was, what do you care? You have no clue about records. The next review got kicked out for scrolling through the records. He said, I was confronted by the owner who said, I know what you're doing. You do not buy records. Stop looking. I don't like you. I stood stunned.
What?
Asked him why. And he says, it's a free country. I will call the police. I walked away 20 metres and thought, do you know what? He cannot be that rude. So I went back and asked him, look, is there a reason I can't look? He says the owner became very angry and confronted me in my face. At this point, I also raised my voice, asking what his problem was and explaining that he had records I wanted. And the guy says, I don't like you. Get out of Germany. Go back to England. I left. I was sad, miserable and visibly shaken. I wish he called the police just so that I could tell them what a horrible guy he is. And these reviews go on and on into the 200 reviews of this shop.
So is he still open as far as
you know? Yeah, apparently so. Isn't that incredible? I tell you,
I'm genuinely speechless.
I wish you could see Tim's face because you look absolutely shocked.
Why would, again, it's like what we were saying. Some people weren't built to face customers.
I'm going back to Prime to give him 3 stars.
Did you say, he said to one person, get out of Germany?
Yeah, doesn't like the English. Berlin is near the top of my list to visit. And I am going to go there and I'm going to report back and I'm going to...
Can you smuggle in a
recorder? I'm going to take a little recorder. Fantastic. And we will see just what that reveals. And trust me, listeners, I will do it.
There's one in Poland in Krakow, which I went to, which has the same reputation that if he doesn't like you, he will tell you to leave. But fortunately, he liked me, so we were okay.
Everyone likes you, Tim.
I think that just about wraps things up for the first episode.
Yes, thank you so much for listening, everyone. We really, really want you to get in touch. We want you to come to us with your ideas, suggestions, any features you'd like to see. The easiest place to find us at the moment is We Buy Records Pod on Twitter.
The dream for us is to basically not have to generate any of this content ourselves, but to have our listeners do it all for us. So that would be brilliant if you could help with that.
Oh, we're open to any suggestions. You know, this is not about us. This is about, you know, you guys.
Aww. That's beautiful, isn't it? Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.